And our film critic, Richard Fitzwilliams, waiting in the wings. Good afternoon, Richard. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. I'm actually broadcasting from Tate Modern. I'm here to see the Picasso exhibition. And I'd like to say a very brief word about London's newest theatre, The Bridge.
Yes, certainly. Just before you go on to that, of course, Picasso's one of our Malaga boys, isn't he? He's born in Malaga. If you ever get a chance to come here and go to the Picasso Museum, Richard, you'll enjoy that in Malaga. Yes, tell us more. I've been looking at a few clips online of the new Julius Caesar production there, and this theatre looks fantastic, all-encompassing, all-inclusive.
You're absolutely right. I've never seen a theatrical experience quite like this, because Julius Caesar, it was the play that introduced me to Shakespeare. Here it's directed by Nicholas Heitner. We have David Morrissey as Mark Antony and Ben Whishaw. Very fine actor. And Ben Whishaw as Brutus. As you come into the auditorium, because I had a seat, there are places for about 500 standing members of the audience, and in a play like this, which begins with a festival, of course, has got the funeral orations and so on, the members of the audience become part of the production. It's almost as though it's a modern dress. It's almost as though you were attending a Donald Trump rally and Caesar is a Trump lookalike.
Yeah, it's quite fascinating, because actually, like you say, the audience become almost like the final cast member, don't they?
Well, they do, and it's also very cleverly done, because one of the weaknesses of Julius Caesar as a play is the second half, and it consists of endless battle scenes after the funeral oration by Antony. And here, of course, it's in modern dress, and they do a fantastic job with sounds, and you're very much part of the experience. And also, it's a play about how the liberal intelligentsia are very out of touch, such as Brutus, for example, despite Cassius's warnings, and the others go along with Brutus because he's so noble, hence the fact you get the rise of Trump, or dare I say it, even Brexit. It's fascinating.
Yeah, I saw an interview with some of the cast members, they were saying there's a bit of a nod towards Donald Trump there, but it's actually set in modern day times, is that right? Rather than set, nobody wearing togas or anything like that.
Oh, no. It's set in modern day times, and in fact, Julius Caesar wears a baseball cap, so he is a Trump lookalike.
I see what they're doing there.
Clever. Well, you could buy a Trump baseball cap, you could buy balloons, you could buy a Caesar poster. The point, though, is wrought so forcefully because you've got the mob who held such sway over Rome, and of course you have the disillusioned people who the liberal intelligentsia are, in fact, are not connected with, and that's one of the reasons that you get the likes of Caesar getting to power. Caesar actually played the people. He was a member of an aristocratic family, and of course it is a riveting experience, especially since Morrissey and Whishaw gave such excellent performances. Also David Calder as Caesar, who, as I say, exactly resembles Trump. So it's an experience. I would urge anyone who comes to London, it's directly opposite the Tower of London, walk across London Bridge, and you're there, and try it. And, if you're up to it, do stand, because if you're near the stage, I mean, it can be electrifying.
Wow. And David Morrissey, I've seen he's doing very well for himself now, isn't he? And he's always been a good actor on British TV. And now he's been in, Walking Dead, ABC's Walking Dead. He's been in Sky's Britannia as well. And great to see people like him up close and personal, I suppose, as well.
Oh, well, quite literally. Indeed, you've just made a very important point, because another feature of this is that the actors, after the production, they come and chat to the audience. So, in fact, I was able to chat to him and, literally up close and personal. So it's a wonderful idea. This is real theatre, lively, inventive. It's fantastic.
Okay, then, we'll move on to some movies. That sounds like I'd love to go and see that. Do we know how long it's going to be running for, or is it kind of as and
when? Another month, I think.
Yeah, okay.
And it will, of course, be filmed. You'll be able to see it on film, but, of course, there's nothing like the real experience.
No, not that's for sure. Moving over to Wonder Wheel, and a movie, and, again, there's obviously a very well-known director of this movie. Tell us more.
Yes, Woody Allen, and I wish I could say a very different thing, because this may well be Allen for reasons dealing with his private life, of course, the last film that this remarkable director has made to be released. And I can only quote the character played by Kate Winslet is called Ginny. And at one stage, she shouts, "Spare me the bad drama. If only I was spared the bad drama, because I was watching a very bad drama indeed." What I couldn't understand is that Woody Allen intends us to feel for these characters. It's set in 1950s in Coney Island, and one of the main characters, Humpty Ranald, played by John Belushi, works on a carousel in an entertainment arcade. But if Allen wants us to feel for his characters, they've got to seem real. The photography, the visuals in this, they keep changing colour. I couldn't understand what he was trying to do. No. And in musical scores, intrusive enough.
Yeah, it should be. It's a great setting, and the idea of setting it in Coney Island, of course, is holiday resort in that time period as well. So much material to go out, and a great cast. So all the things should be pointing the right way here.
Yes, they should. Well, I can only just say that the character of Humpty yells in one of his arguments, there are constant arguments with Ginny, that he needs a drink. Well, that's precisely what I needed, because you're reduced gradually as this movie drags, and it's only 101 minutes, and it really feels it. A plot that should be dramatic, because Humpty's daughter by his first marriage, Carolina, played by Juno Temple, as you say, a very good cast, she's left a gangster husband. She works for Ginny as a waitress, and they're both rivals for the affection of Mickey Rubin, played by Justin Timberlake, who's a good actor, a local lifeguard. And he talks to us through the fourth wall. It's mostly about love. Love who he loves and which of them he chooses. All I can say is it's a pity there's no such thing as a fifth wall, because I'd like to have cross-examined Woody Allen about what on earth possessed him to write such clunky and unreal dialogue. Mm. It hasn't got the charm, the wit, the sharp observations that, most of his work is characterized by this. I mean, Kate Winslet's son from an earlier marriage is called Richie. He's a pyromaniac. I can only say it's a pity he didn't get hold of these rolls of celluloid before I had to endure watching this.
Moving away from the actual film, the situation is, like you say, it could quite possibly be his last film. And I was just reading earlier online that Michael Caine has vowed never to work with Woody Allen again. As other actors have joined that situation as well to denounce him, which is all over the press at the moment. So it quite possibly could be his last film.
You're absolutely right. It very likely would be, if not the last one he makes, the last one that is actually released. But what a pity that he's going out, so to speak, if that is the case, with a movie that, well, I frankly just didn't care. I mean, the gangster husband's trying to find Caroline. Do we care? Well, she's been an FBI informant. Not at all. Are we interested in who Mickey loves because it's a love triangle? It's the point of the movie. No, I mean, I can only say this movie, Boris Johnson, I'm going to borrow one of his phrases, inverted pyramid of piffle.
Now, I tell you, there's nothing worse than watching a movie, a film at home, and, and I'll turn to my wife and sometimes say, "Oh, I don't like that person," and you meant to like them. And, and it's, the whole idea is actually you want to see them get their comeuppance, and actually, but you meant to like them. The film is, there's nothing worse than not liking the characters and actually not caring whether they exist or not.
Exactly. It was, and also all these strange colours. I still don't understand why someone keeps changing colour with lighting, which, well, it made no sense. It would have made no sense if we could have seen them beautifully photographed, because the script was so poor.
Yeah.
But it's a great shame, because we know what Woody Allen can do, and he's certainly not done it yet.
So I'm expecting maybe two? Do you want to find
Or one, I'm even? I'm afraid that's... You're right. Yes.
One out of five. Yeah.
it's come to that. I mean, I think there's only one other film Woody Allen made that I would have done that to, and that was Cassandra's Crossing. It really is a pity.
Okay. Moving on to maybe something, a better script maybe, here we go, Mary Magdalene. So it's quite an old script, I should imagine. Tell us more.
Well, actually, well, of course, you're spot on. It's the one of the oldest scripts there is, but it was written, in, as far as most people are concerned, in 1591. It was Pope Gregory the Great who said that she was a prostitute, but there was absolutely no real evidence scripturally.
Mm.
And people remember Jesus Christ Superstar and Mary played as a prostitute in that. So wonderful, you know, I don't know how to love in that wonderful that wonderful musical number, or alternatively, The Last Temptation of Christ, the Scorsese's art house movie, very good. She's played as a prostitute there. But she wasn't. There is no evidence, as I say, for that. And it's interesting that the Vatican in 2016 recognized Mary as a disciple or apostle of Christ and as the main interpreter of his message after the resurrection.
Mm.
And that is what the film focuses on, because, of course, it is a feminist film and it puts Mary at the center of events. And in fact, she appears everywhere from with Christ when he enters Jerusalem to the Last Supper, the Garden of Gethsemane, as well as in Scripture, as you'll find, she's at the crucifixion and the resurrection. And it relies, and it is a good film, it's a rather spiritual film, it relies on two central performances. Rooney Mara as Mary, who's very sensitive, and a terrific performance by Joaquin Phoenix as Christ.
Yeah. Does it stay close to its Bible roots? I mean, there's been a lot of Mary Magdalene material around of late, which has been quite controversial, of course.
Well, this will be controversial because it departs from biblical roots to look at matters from Mary's point of view.
Mm.
And we originally meet her when she's in the village of Magdala. She's very independent. She rejects the husband chosen by her family for her. They're subjected to a pretty brutal exorcism and water. And then she discovers the amazing gifts that Christ has, and his sanctity touches her. She becomes a follower, and there is a love between them, not a love that's consummated. She realizes she's going to lose him, but she feels able to interpret his teachings. When Christ talks about bringing a kingdom,
yeah,
changing the world, what he means isn't breaking the yoke of the Romans from Judea, which is
what they were expecting. Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. It means realizing the good which is within all of us, and thus building a completely different kingdom of the future. And here you've got a strong performance by Chiwetel Ejiofor as Peter, who disproves the way Christ seems to favor Mary, and a rather less impressive performance by a very good actor, Tahir Rahim, as Judas. He's a very confused character. You wonder why he acts as he does, because he doesn't seem to know what he's doing. The other fault in the movie is that it's a form of a presence. There's only one spectacular scene where Christ, this is forceful. Joaquin Phoenix can be very forceful, he can be very sensitive and gentle, and when the scenes where he performs miracles are terrific, because there you have the way he's so drained and the crowds experience ecstasy. But when he sees the priests and how they're despoiling the temple, he's furious. It's a sensitive, intelligently scripted film, but it is a very small-scale film. That you hardly see a Roman soldier, and there should have been more of a malign presence of Rome, I felt.
Okay. So, budget-wise, is it a smaller budget movie, would you say, or...?
I don't think it cost much to make, but I think that Garth Davis, who did Lion, has got a movie that, well, I think entertain the thoughtful, but you do have to be prepared for what you're going to see. Visually, it's very good. The scenes, for example, the disciples very often are painterly light, and you've got the barren landscape of Judea very well brought to home visually. You can see why the Romans absolutely dreaded being posted there. It's an intelligent film, but Joaquin Phoenix is excellent. I mean, that really is a top-class performance, as Christ. I wouldn't be surprised. We're going to meet him next week, by the way, again, with you and never really hear. And so it's two films in 2 weeks, and he's excellent. And
yeah.
He really is the centre of the film. But Mary, of course, is a central character in it.
Absolutely. Ratings out of five, then, Richard Vanat?
I'm going to four.
Lovely. Well, that's certainly something I'll be interested in, so I'll certainly be watching that. What can we expect for next week, then, Richard? Another Joaquin Phoenix film, by the sounds of it.
Yes, absolutely. I saw this film at the London Film Festival, and I don't know why it was released so late, but far too late for the Oscars. You Were Never Really Here. Quite a movie. And also Tomb Raider.
Okay, all right. We'll see which one of those gets the better ratings, I'm guessing already. Richard, I'll speak to you. If anybody wants to find you online, how can they do that?
It's www.richardfitzwilliams.com and Twitter at @RFitzwilliams.
Okay, lovely. Thank you, Richard. Speak again next week. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.